No surprise here, but you know I gotta have my devices when I travel. I would be lost without my smartphone. I use it for directions, to find things to do, and most importantly, where to eat. I rely on it as a digital music player to enhance my experience as I explore a new place. Oh, and sometimes I even use it to make calls and stuff. That's the kind of traveler I am. And if you travel, you know what kind you are, too. That's why you go with the Delta SkyMiles Platinum American Express card. If you travel, you know. Working remotely, where you are shouldn't dictate what you do. Work from the road by turning your vehicle into a reliable high-speed data Wi-Fi hotspot with AT&T in-car Wi-Fi. On the network that covers more roads than any other carrier, take your work on the road and AT&T will be there to keep you connected. Connect up to 10 devices and stream conference calls, finish up that presentation, or answer last-minute emails. Why wait? Go to att.com/in-car Wi-Fi today for free trial eligibility. Based on independent third-party data, number of devices varies by manufacturer. Always pay careful attention to the road and don't drive distracted. Wi-Fi hotspot intended for passenger use only when vehicle is in operation. Compatible device and vehicle required.
Now your ideas don't have to wait. Now they have everything they need to come to life. Dell Technologies and Intel are creating technology that loves ideas, loves expanding your business and evolving your passions. They push what technology can do so great ideas can happen right now. Find out how to bring your ideas to life at Dell.com. Welcome to now.
When you think about the future, what kind of technology do you envision? Whatever the future holds, artificial intelligence will undoubtedly be at the heart of it all. Join Graham Klass as he hosts Season 2 of Technically Speaking, an Intel podcast, and hear from the minds transforming healthcare, retail, entertainment, personal computing, and more with the help of AI. Tune in every other Tuesday and explore the latest technology that's changing our world today and creating a more accessible tomorrow. Listen to Technically Speaking, an Intel podcast on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Brought to you by the reinvented 2012 Camry. It's ready. Are you?
Get in touch with technology with Tech Stuff from HowStuffWorks.com.
Hello, everybody. Welcome to the podcast. My name is Chris Paulette. I'm an editor at How Stuff Works. And today I have sitting next to me, Jonathan Strickland, one of our writers. I suppose I should remove the tape.
Yeah, well, I was going to make a great owl sound, but I don't even actually have tape. That was radio magic.
Oh,
or okay. Podcast magic, if you will.
Podcast magic. Well, the reason Jonathan sounded muffled up front was because we were talking today about parental controls.
Yes.
Although I'm not his parent.
No. No. Let's clear that up right away. No. He is not my long-lost father. My father is neither long nor lost.
He doesn't happen to wear a big black suit with a mask over his head and wields a lightsaber?
Not often.
Okay.
All right.
So anyway, parental controls are a subject of much debate simply because, let's get down to the nitty-gritty. It's a form of censorship.
Yes.
About which many people, including Jonathan, and I'm probably not going to sound like it, but I know, an anti-censorship person. But I also have two young daughters, one of which is too young to do any more than drool on the keyboard.
Right.
But, recently I have a kindergartner who's very computer savvy and started thinking about that the other day. Looked at the Mac OS, and there's a parental control suite built into the operating system.
Yes.
Just like there is for Microsoft Vista.
Mm-hmm.
And these are really simple solutions. You know, it says turn off the computer at a certain time on school nights, or only allow them to use the computer for, and then you get it to set, you know, half an hour, a whole hour, you know, 3 hours, and you get to pick. So those kinds of things really, okay, not censorship, but you do have some control over how much time your child spends using the computer. And they're built right into the operating systems, which, you know, seem pretty cool. Now, they also go farther. You can allow them to block dirty words in the dictionary, websites that might be offensive. Of course, you're relying on somebody else to set those sites up, you know, say, well, go ahead and subscribe to these conventions. So you're sort of trusting somebody else to block your websites for you. But, you know, that's essentially how it works. And I thought, well, you know, I would like to limit my, my kids' time on the computer. So I set up a basic set of parental controls. So I'm so far pretty happy with it.
Cool. Cool. Yeah. Back when I was a kid, I was fortunate to be part of a household that had computers pretty early on. So, I mean, even when I was, I guess about maybe 12 or 13, we had a computer. This is kind of dating myself a little bit. But we had the first real computer that we had. I'm not going to count the Texas Instruments, and please don't send me mad email about that. But was the Apple IIe. The Apple IIe. Nice. And we had an Apple IIe. We had several games on it, which – ostensibly were for me, but it was not unusual to find that my father playing games and beating my high scores. But the real reason we got it was because my father writes novels. So our parental control system was Dad coming into the office and kicking me off the computer so that he could write the next chapter of his book, which was, you know, necessary because in order to supplement his income and pay for my education and everything along those lines and those of my sister, you know, he kind of had to. Yeah. So that was the old style of parental control where it was very much hands on. But yeah, today when you've got kids who have their own computers now, or their own phone lines, I mean, you've got a lot more technology, available and some of it geared specifically towards children. You really have to take these other things into consideration. It's not like, you know, we can only afford one machine for the entire house now. The prices have dropped so much that it's not a luxury item anymore.
Nope.
Not for a lot of families anyways. For some families, yes, it still is. But for many families, you know, it's not unusual to find three or four computers in the household. So in that case, you can't really just, you know, what, pop your head in every 5 minutes and make sure that your kid's not jumping back online to check out the internet. It's not really practical. So I can begrudgingly agree that these are a necessary, I hesitate to use the word evil, but they are necessary, in many cases. yeah.
Well, see,
that actually hurt me a little bit.
Yeah, I'm sure it did. I'm sure it did. Of course, parental controls don't go, they don't stop at the edge of your computer screen. There are also many other screens that you'll find parental controls on, like your TV.
Yeah, the V-chip.
The V-chip, which is built in actually to the TV itself, which is supposed to, allow the rating system to sort of help you control what can and can't be seen.
Right.
You know, you'll also find it on a lot of set-top boxes, like if you're a cable or a satellite subscriber. You'll, in many cases, find that there's some way to knock out certain channels. Personally, I like doing that with the shopping channels.
Nice. So you put a little password in there.
Because I, you know, don't really want to watch them.
Right, right. Well, and really, technology has become so pervasive that that's pretty much why you need these things. Let's go back to the computer one for a bit, because I did write an article that dovetails into this conversation. Mm-hmm. It's not directly relevant, but tangentially, I suppose, which was about internet censorship.
Oh yes,
and one of the big problems are that advocacy groups have with privacy advocacy groups and free speech advocacy groups have with these kind of solutions is that they're not the most elegant or accurate ways to prevent people from seeing certain sites. A lot of them depend on blacklists. So in that case, like Chris was saying earlier, you're depending on someone else saying this site is inappropriate for people to look at work or for children to have access to.
Mm-hmm.
And so that's just a list of websites that someone else somewhere has determined are not appropriate for you or your kids to look at. But in other cases, they use keyword blocking. So it's kind of like a search engine. You know, search engines will often scour a website and categorize it by the keywords that are on there. So when you do a search for that keyword term, that's how they pop up. Well, same sort of thing for these parental controls. they search for a database of keywords. And if those keywords show up, or phrases in some cases, that site will automatically get blocked by the software. And the problem is that it doesn't always block the appropriate sites. Sometimes it blocks stuff that really you should have access to. I have friends who work at the Center for Disease Control.
Right.
And some of them work in realms which require them to do research on things like sexually transmitted diseases.
Sure.
But with certain software blocking applications on there, or website blocking applications, they can't go to the sites they need to go to do research, because these keywords are popping up and the information's being blocked. So there are times where this can really prevent you from even doing your job.
Right.
So that's kind of that's why I look at this as sort of a downside in many ways. Now when you're talking about kids, it's a different matter altogether. But the problem is that these parental controls aren't being applied just by parents to kids. They're being applied by companies to employees, or in some cases by governments to citizens.
True enough. There are instances even of ISPs, internet service providers, who are filtering content that comes into homes based on their content for, you know, actually I've heard of political content being censored.
Right.
And we're just talking about in the United States. Of course, there are other places like China who are famous, where, you know, they're famous for blocking large large volumes of content on the internet.
Right. And Cuba, which has its own intranet, mm-hmm. which acts like an internet but is really all self-contained. It doesn't really access anything to the outside. So it really insulates the citizens.
That's true. It's one of those things too, that people try to use it for, applications such as libraries, public libraries, where, in this case, you'd want it to shut down at a certain point to log off all the computers in the library. But, there is a big debate in many library circles, over whether or not it is a good idea or a bad idea to allow censorship. Of course, you don't want, if your child is working on a term paper, for a class, you don't want somebody surfing the internet for porn right next to them.
Right.
But at the same time, you know, is it right? You know, one of the central tenets to the American Library Association's, code is that you're supposed to open these channels and fight censorship in all fronts. I know this because I'm pursuing my degree in library and information sciences. So this is a topic we've talked about a lot lately, but, it is one of those things where they, you know, there are people fighting on both sides of it. They see a reason for it, but, for as far as kids are concerned, but as far as adults are concerned, do you apply the same rules, and in what way?
Right.
It's difficult.
Yeah. Yeah. Do you have a separate section in the library? I mean, and if you is that inappropriate in a way, because it casts a certain light on the people who go in there?
One of the most popular ways of handling it is to notify the library customer that they are not using a filtered internet connection.
Right.
And to offer an unfiltered internet connection to that person, you know, as an alternative. It's like, well, here it is. You know, of course, they also risk losing federal funding for these projects, because that's part of the legislation.
And this is, you know, it's just going to get more complicated. It's sure. not going to get easy. You know, it's not going to there are no easy answers to this. And it's not going to, you know, there's no solution that's going to pop up in the next 30 seconds or something. I mean, you're hearing the latest news I've heard about this is for airlines that are considering, you know, that are starting to use. They're starting to Wi-Fi enable, right, yeah. In-flight internet. They have Wi-Fi enabled in-flight services. So you pay to have access to the internet, and you can surf the web on your laptop in flight for a fee. And there are people, there are both customers, there are airline personnel like flight attendants and even pilots mm-hmm. who are all concerned about whether or not they should put in filters to block people from surfing for porn on an airplane flight.
Right.
And I mean, that's definitely one of those situations where you're thinking, really, why would you want to you're sitting next to perfect strangers. And I've heard arguments about this. I've heard arguments that say, well, why would you look on someone else's screen? Well, it's in your field of vision. I mean, right. You know, I don't know about you, but my vision does extend beyond directly straight in front of me.
Right.
And the way you sit in an airplane, if you're in coach, I mean, you know, your elbows are sticking in the ribs of the person next to you. There's not a whole lot of space there.
Well, if you think about it, one of the biggest arguments that I've heard for people who do not want airlines to allow cell phone use is they don't want to hear everybody else talking.
No, I don't want
and
to
having
hear
their
that.
Personal phone conversations. Right. Well, why would you want to, you know, I'll give that some credit. You know, you're a captive audience. For your 4-hour flight, you have to sit next to this person in very close proximity.
Yeah, if it's a full flight, you can't switch seats or anything like
yeah.
that.
Yeah. So, I mean, I don't really want to watch somebody surf for porn, you know, sitting yeah. right next to them in coach for an entire flight.
I don't ever want to. But particularly not when you're a captive audience strapped into a seat at 30,000 feet. That definitely does not appeal to me. And I've heard suggestions, perhaps tongue in cheek, for solutions like having the curtained off area in the back of the plane so you could just have the porn section. And do we really need to turn airplanes into that kind of environment? I mean, we used to have the smoking sections, which, depending on your point of view, were bad enough. From my own point of view, definitely bad enough.
Yeah.
So I'm glad those are gone. But, it's just such a can of worms. And even though I am vehemently anti-censorship, I guess it's one of those things where it's okay as long as it doesn't impact me. because I can definitely say that if I were sitting next to someone and they were looking at inappropriate material, however you may define that, it would definitely make me uncomfortable. And I mean, it just seems wildly inappropriate. You would hope people would use their individual judgment and come to the conclusion of, hey, this is something I should only look at in the privacy of my own home, bathroom, closet, whatever. And not on a 737 going on a transatlantic flight, you know?
Yeah.
But you can't necessarily trust that people will do that. So that's where the can of worms comes in.
And that's what I think I'm going to have to do eventually with my kids. They're, at least as far as I can tell, pretty smart kids. And they're going to have to, they're going to be able to get around a lot of the parental controls I could set up for them. You know, they'll find some way to do it.
Yeah.
Because
kids
you know,
are
that's,
smart.
The kids are smart and, it's,
they soak up information so quickly. So, as fast as we put up barriers, they're going to know ways around them. It's kind of, it's both admirable and scary.
Yes, it is. And, I think you're right. I think what it comes down to is educating people and saying, mm-hmm. look, you know, this isn't appropriate at this time. You don't want to do this in front of all these people. You don't want to expose people to things that you wouldn't want to be exposed to. And here's why. And
right.
you have to get in there and explain what it is, what's going on, and say, you know, you're going to have to use your judgment.
Yeah. So we're getting back to the old parental control program.
Exactly.
It's interesting, right? You can't just solely depend upon technology. Although technology can certainly help you out, you can't depend on that as the cure-all solution. And you got to hope that we don't have too many Andy Kaufmans out there, because those are exactly the kind of people who would want to push your buttons and do what you're not supposed to do in public just to see how people react. And there's always going to be those people, but hopefully they'll be in the minority.
Right.
Well, I guess that about wraps up this discussion. If you want to learn more, you can read all about internet censorship on howstuffworks.com right now, and we'll talk to you again soon.
For more on this and thousands of other topics, visit howstuffworks.com. Let us know what you think. Send an email to podcast@howstuffworks.com. Brought to you by the reinvented 2012 Camry. It's ready. Are you?
No surprise here, but you know I gotta have my devices when I travel. I would be lost without my smartphone. I use it for directions, to find things to do, and most importantly, where to eat. I rely on it as a digital music player to enhance my experience as I explore a new place. Oh, and sometimes I even use it to make calls and stuff. That's the kind of traveler I am. And if you travel, you know what kind you are too. That's why you go with the Delta SkyMiles Platinum American Express card. If you travel, you know.
Diamonds Direct Spring Sale starts this weekend. Get 20% off rings, earrings, pendants, bracelets, and more. It's the best store-wide sale of the season. Plus, book an appointment and get an additional $100 off. That's 20% off plus $100 off store-wide. And enjoy an expanded selection of the latest styles with designer appearances each weekend. Tons of engagement rings on sale, too. 20% off starts Friday and opens Sundays. Details at DiamondsDirect.com.
You're a growing business, which means you need every spare hour you can find. That's why the most successful growing businesses are working together in Slack. Slack is where work happens, with all your people, data, and information in one AI-powered place. Start a call instantly in huddles and ditch cumbersome calendar invites. Or build an automation with Workflow Builder to take routine tasks off your plate. No coding required. Grow your business in Slack. Visit slack.com to get started.
Let's clear out winter and clean up the lawn with Spring Black Friday Savings at the Home Depot. Right now, get the Ryobi One Plus Leaf Blower for just $89 and make your lawn work easier with a powerful 90 miles an hour of clearing power. And with convenient online shopping, you can order on the app, pick up in store, and get outside sooner. Get your yard spring ready with the Ryobi One Plus Leaf Blower, now just $89 during Spring Black Friday at the Home Depot. How doers get more done.